This season of the Future Great City podcast is sponsored by Red Brick Realty, a new full-service boutique brokerage firm focused on helping you buy and sell residential, commercial, and investment properties. Tell Red Brick you heard about them here on the Future Great City podcast, and you'll receive $500 off buying or selling a home, apartment building, or commercial property. You can reach Scott Sturdivant at 314-420-9491 or Scott at redbrickstl.com. This is the Future Great City podcast from nextstl.com. So we're here with 28th Ward Alderwoman Lyda Crewson. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, and you're officially a candidate for the mayor of the city of St. Louis, and we're going to get to that in what we're going to call part two. So we wanted to start off just talking about the 28th Ward, where it is, who lives there, and some of the challenges and things happening there. So in your mind, how do you describe the 28th Ward? I think for a lot of people, they simply affiliate that with the Central West End and consider it to be the Medical Center, Forest Park, and you know, million-dollar homes. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the 28th Ward in your view?
Well, actually, the Medical Center and south of Lindell are not even in the 28th mm-hmm. Ward.
Right. So that's the 17th.
That is the 17th, correct. The 28th Ward is a very diverse area. Rich, poor, black, white, gay, straight, and a real mix of young and old, which I think is one of the reasons that all of us like to live there. Geographically, it goes from the city limits on the west, so it includes the Loop, all the way up to Olive there, where Skinker turns into Kindland. That's in the 28th Ward. So the Loop, south to the Cheshire, actually south to Highway 40. Couple little blocks of Dogtown there, the High Point neighborhood. Most of Forest Park. And then coming east, it includes Skinker to Bolivar neighborhoods, to Bolivar Place neighborhood, and probably about a third of the Central West End, the portion of the Central West End that is from De Bolivar East all the way to Boyle, and then...
Okay, and this is like the Euclid corridor that, again,
the Euclid
kind of
corridor
with
north
the
of Lindell.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. Right. Maryland and Euclid, where a lot of people associate the Central
right.
West End, is
right.
in the 28th Ward, yes.
And so, you know, one thing I've paid a lot of attention to, and I think people are interested in hearing, is just the changing demographics and the changing population of the city. And we're, you know, famously, we've lost population, you know, decade after decade. And so, and the Central West End, or I'm sorry, I always say that, the 28th Ward is, mm-hmm. is no exception. So in the last decade, you know, 2000 to 2010, there's about a 6% decrease in the population in the ward. And there was a significant decrease in the number of black residents. So it was a 24% decrease. And I think that, again, the 28th Ward and the Central Corridor and the Central West End, a lot of people are looking at as being positive because of the growth, but it's also either people will call it gentrifying or just changing in demographics. Mm-hmm. What's happening mm-hmm. in your ward that you're seeing, a small decrease in population, but then also, you know, particularly like the West End has had an influx of white residents and a decrease in black residents. What's happening?
Well, I think that there is a small decrease, or there was a small decrease in population, and some of that is just the evolution of playing out for smaller families. That's been going mm-hmm. on for several decades, of course. But as people grow older and their kids might leave home, and they still may be there in their house, because what you don't see is really much vacancy mm-hmm. in the 28th Ward. So we have roughly the same number of housing units that we did, 20 years ago now. Lately, there are a couple of new large buildings that are being built, which I'm sure we'll get to, that'll increase the number of units. But over the years, the 28th Ward is almost a completely built-out environment. There are very few vacant lots. And so what you have there is you have a decrease, I think, in household size, which accounts for some of the decrease in population. It's not a significant amount, as you know.
Yeah, and we've seen that across the city and kind of famously in the Shaw Tower Grove area, which everyone mm-hmm. kind of cites as being kind of a booming part of town with expensive real estate now and expensive rent, but a really fast decreasing population.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened there a lot of times. There's a lot of conversions to smaller families, but in the Central mm-hmm. West End, the 28th Ward, you have a lot of large homes, and you have, right, these may have been families of six or seven or eight. They wouldn't have large families, and now you have two people living in 4,000 square feet.
There are a lot of large homes, but there are many, many more multifamily buildings and multifamily mm-hmm. units in the 28th Ward as well. If you think about Skinker to Bolivar, there are many, many apartments in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
De Bolivar Place, which is the area between De Bolivar and Union, that is completely multifamily housing. There are a couple of thousand apartments there. There's one single family house in DeBolivar Place. So while what the image that might be in your mind is big homes, and there are some big homes, there are many, many studio apartments, one-bedroom apartments, two-bedroom apartments that also make up the 28th Ward. Geographically, if you take Forest Park out of the map of the 28th Ward, it's a very small footprint. You have high rises along Skinker. You have high rises along Lindell in the Central West End portion. You have high rises on Union. So it's a densely populated area. And yes, I think household size has reduced a bit, but it's a lot more than big houses. Many, many multifamily buildings and units.
Great. And so, yeah, let's get to some of the development. There's a lot happening, and there's a lot, and not all of it is again in your ward, and people kind of glom these things together. But I first, to go back a couple years, I think the first time I kind of learned who you were or heard from you very much, frankly, was the San Luis Apartments. And this was a building that the Archdiocese owned at the time, at least when I moved there, and they'd used it for senior housing. And it was vacated and then left empty for a couple years, and then they ended up tearing it down. And can you, we don't want to rehash the whole thing, but I remember that was my first kind of cognition that there, A, was a group that valued historic buildings and mid-century buildings in the city, and cognition that that wasn't enough to save a building, right? So I was kind of in this process of learning and being like, oh, wow, that got torn down anyway. Like that right. could have been very cool. What happened with that building? And
well, you know how some people say you can't fight City Hall? No. I think you can fight City Hall, but I'm not sure you can fight the Archdiocese.
Right. Well, this was my assumption, but and it's part of their campus now. It's a surface parking lot.
It is, and that's been helpful. Right.
And Rosati Kane, the high school, the women's high school uses it. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, there was an argument for it.
Yeah, there is an argument for it. I think that happened, I don't know, I think that's been 5 or 6 years ago now. I don't recall, maybe more. Yeah. I don't know that same thing would happen today, fortunately. Yeah. I think that was at the sort of the beginning of the period of time when people were actually beginning to value mid-century modern architecture. Mm-hmm. Much more valued today. You know, the city has actually done a study to document mid-century modern buildings. There are a number of them along Lindell. So hopefully that doesn't continue to happen today.
Well, and you were a supporter coming out of that of form-based code, which was another thing that came out of that, which should not allow surface parking lots on Lindell. And that was part of the argument. It was that whether it's the building or not, having these parking lots on one of our main urban streets is shouldn't be allowed. So.
It's really not ideal. But
yeah. All right. Well, we'll move on from the San Luis. What is exciting in your ward now? What projects do you look at and think this is either transformative or just very valuable to your ward?
Well, I think the Opus project, which is under construction, it's up at about 9 stories now. It'll ultimately be 12 stories, and that is a 200-unit building that is at the corner of Lindell and Euclid. And that's going to be, I think, a really nice apartment rental project with parking inside the building, about 10,000 square feet of retail or commercial space on the first floor. With honoring the setback of Lindell, which is a 50-foot setback right there, so that it's meets the building line. So I think that's going to be a nice project. Some people would say, oh, we've got too many people here already.
Right.
You always hear that.
You hear that, huh?
But yeah. I do. But you know, I have to say this: we all want those restaurants and businesses that are close by there to thrive and do well. Right. And you know what? We all cannot eat out every night. One, we can't afford to eat out every night. And secondly, we get way too fat if we ate out every night. So we need to, you know, density really does, make the mixed use neighborhoods thrive. So
yeah, and we, you know, on the website, and I like to point out a lot that, you know, what creates traffic are parking spots and destinations, not residents. So if you have this building, you know, tables are going to fill up and 20 of them are going to come from the building itself. So then you're lessening the parking load. And to mention one factor of that project, and that was something we followed pretty closely, that I know there was pushback about parking basically in the building. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I know at some point you either I may not say it right, but I think the city and it appeared, I think yourself, had kind of signed off on the project and said this works, and neighbors had kind of come back and said, we demand more parking. You know, where are employees going to park? They already park on our streets.
Right.
And the developer ended up adding another level of parking, about 80 spots or something.
The developer did end up adding another level of parking. And it was really, we thought, the developer and I, as I thought through it, thought really that we would be able to have some parking at the parking garage across the street, which is owned by City Treasurer Tashara Jones, mm-hmm. owned by that office. Mm-hmm. And so we were working with them to try to secure some parking in the parking garage to make, you know, there will be employees in that building and, you know, there'll be that sort of thing. And so to kind of go ahead and give parking to the residents without having commercial parking, we were unsuccessful in working with the treasurer's office to get that to happen.
Well,
their
like
view
no...
was just that, you know, we can't help those people. They'll have to do their own thing. So that was, you know, and the folks who live nearby, you know, they already can't probably park in front of their houses. And there's, mm-hmm. you know, there's no guarantee of that. I live across the street from New City School. So I know all about that and I empathize with it. But on the other hand, you know, I chose to live there and folks are close to the action. But it's all about balancing the interests really of residents and businesses when you represent an area that truly is mixed use. And that's what makes it so great to live there. Is mixed use, but you still.
What's interesting is like people are there. It seems like, you know, the last people to move in are the first ones who don't want it to change. You know, they moved in because it's a certain thing, and they don't want that thing to change, even if they love it. You know, if the people before them didn't want it to change either, and then they move in. So
one of the things we
suffer from is with lack of information on the parking issue. So things like this come up, and it just becomes a debate of the developer saying, like, basically. You know, making this up, but, you know, don't make us spend more money on parking. Parking's extremely expensive to build.
It is.
So a couple $1 million of extra parking spaces. And neighbors saying basically without any parking studies or anything. I mean, it's an opinion. All these things come down. And what we say is always comes down to a political question, and it's political pressure from residents. It's the developer, it's the alderperson, it's the city. There's no traffic study or mathematical equation that says, well, this is the number of parking spots you need. I mean, these are value questions. And so I'm a little bit interested in just how you weigh that. And obviously you're answering to residents because those are the people who can vote. Opus can't vote for you.
I answer to both. I consider that I represent both residents' interests and the interests of businesses, because frankly, a lot of the reasons that a lot of the residents want to live there is to be close to the businesses. Mm-hmm. So I also represented that particular area, which is, you know, the heart of the Central West End, during a time when there was nothing on Maryland. So 15 years ago, 18 years ago, there were almost no shops, no stores, nothing open on Maryland. And so that has all turned around due to the good investment of a number of people there. But it is all about trying to balance those interests. And I know that residents move in because they want to be close to the action. But then sometimes they get close to the action and the action gets a little bit too much for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's natural. Yeah. I think it's a normal thing. So you try to balance those interests.
And I think in a lot of our city, people are used to the fact, just naturally, that things don't change. Things change here very slowly. And so, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's the Hill or it's Tower Grove or parts of the 28th Ward, I mean, you can live there for 20 years and have very little change. And all of a sudden things change.
See, I don't really think that's true.
No?
I really don't think that. I mean, the Central West End is nothing today like it was 20 years ago. And the Loop is definitely nothing today like it was 20 years ago. So the change is incremental. And I think that sometimes, you know, whenever you show up to see something, that's kind of how it is. But if you really take a look at these things over a 20-year period of time, it's very, very different, both in the Central West End and in the Loop today than it was 20 years ago. And for the better, I would say.
And what would you say, and I get a wide variety of answers from aldermen on this question. So how much credit do you take for that? Like how, and what's your role? I guess if you don't want to say, you know, whether I take credit or not, you know, a lot of people look at successful wards and say, well, they must have a great alderperson. They must have stewarded development. Mm-hmm. And they look at wards that are failing and have large vacancy and say, well, their leadership is terrible. And I think there's obviously a lot more to it than that. So
there's
what is
a
your
lot
role
more,
and how do you foster that development?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to try to balance the interests and to make things happen. Now, the people that really make it happen are the developers, the bankers, the risk takers, the construction, all those sort of folks. What an alderman can do is goof it up. Mm-hmm. And more than anything, they
that's
can.
That's another podcast. We can.
They
do a
can
whole
goof
one
it up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just try to listen to the what it takes to get to yes, and you know, that usually involves some balancing act and some compromise and making sure neighbors are aware of it. You know, we've got a big controversy going on right now. It's you know, it's not that big, but you know, Forest Park Parkway is going to be closed here shortly. You heard about that. So, you know, there are a lot of people worried about that.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but that's a great example of something that came up that wasn't, there were not public meetings about it or anything, right? As I understand it.
You know, it's so interesting because, I don't know, I've talked about it at probably three or four 28th Ward meetings, at the Skinker de Bolivar Community Council meeting.
It wasn't a secret.
It was no secret. So. But, and, you know, they have been presenting to the Forest Park Advisory Board. The first time they presented was over a year ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that I think that's fair. Not everybody goes to meetings. And if you're a meeting goer, you probably knew about it. But otherwise, you may not have because it hadn't been written about. We should have gotten you to write about it earlier.
Someone should have told me about it.
I should have told you about that earlier.
But where does that stand? I guess it's going forward. I know there was a delay because there's a lot of different things going in. It's not just the intersection. It's the Metrolink and a bridge over Metrolink within Forest Park. I mean, it's a pretty complicated project.
It is pretty complicated. I think they're going to start in August. You know, that's 30 days later than they thought they were going to start.
That's pretty normal.
And I really think, you know, the traffic detour plan is going to be instrumental. We don't want to dump all the Forest Park Parkway traffic right into the neighborhood if they don't want to be there, mm-hmm. you know, if that's not their destination. And so the street department is working to make sure we have informational signage maybe as far out as 170 so that if you think you're going to take the Innerbelt, or excuse me, the Forest Park Parkway all the way downtown, they tell you while you're out there at the Innerbelt that, hey, this is going to be blocked here pretty soon. So if you don't want to go that way, maybe you ought to go on down and get on Highway 40.
And that project is funded in large part from the medical center, BJC, and WashU, and then with the local funding. How do you work with entities that big, frankly, with that much money? And same with Forest Park. I mean, and that everyone wants more money, but that's a big institution that's been successful at fundraising. Forest Park mm-hmm. Forever has the master plan in the park. How do you work with organizations that are that, that big?
Well, they're big, but honestly, they want to be good neighbors, and they do want to, you know, make sure that the project is good for everybody because their success is tied to that also. And last week we had at the 28th Ward meeting, June Fowler was there from BJC explaining the project, taking questions. She had engineers with her in case, you know, mm-hmm. she needed a technical answer of some kind, which turned out she didn't. She knows all about the project and did a great job. But, you know, it's just a matter of working with them and making sure that everybody's interests are taken into account. Crosswalks. We're going to have a bike path in the park, which is going to be greatly improve access along the east edge of Forest Park, which right now is a bit harsh. I would say
the sidewalk's terrible to ride a bike on. I did it last week. Yeah. It was pretty. You know, the little brick panels that they put in to put in the streetlights. Yeah. It's a mess.
So you won't have to do that after this project is done because there'll be a bike trail that'll be in the park that'll connect you down to Hospital Drive.
I see what's challenging in your ward and with Forest Park and the entities we talked about. It's a little bit like downtown St. Louis, where there really are significant different pressures. So, mm-hmm. you know, downtown has the stadiums and they want to get everybody in and out as fast as possible to go to games, but you have 8,000 residents and you have mm-hmm. retail and you have government jobs and all kinds of other functions. And in the same way, I know BJC wants people to be able to get to the hospital and see their doctor as soon as possible. And then you're talking to residents across the street who might not want the intersection to change. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess you've answered that as just a big balancing act.
I think
but
the intersection is going to be significantly better when you can mm-hmm. actually get on and off Forest Park Parkway from Kings Highway.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to convince me. It's a great project.
That's going to take a little bit of pressure off of some of the side streets. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we got to go through 12 months of construction mm-hmm. here, and that's always, you know, some pain. But that's pretty short term. We just have to get through that as best we can, and then I think it's going to end up being better.
I think one of the big challenges is when you're in a city and you have that intersection the way it is. Once you take a wrong turn, you're kind of messed up.
Stuck.
You're backwards. You're trying to loop around. You're making illegal turns, and it's just a mess. And people, you know, look, you miss that pull off and you're on Forest Park Parkway and you're not familiar with St. Louis, all of a sudden you don't know where you are.
You have
no way to turn around and
I think those grade separated intersections must have been a fad. Maybe in 50 years they'll look back and identify, you know, what our fads are, but
we'll see them around.
We probably will, right?
So let's go back to you've been the alderwoman for the 28th ward since 1997. Is that correct?
That's true.
It's been that long. So how did you decide to run, and what was your motivation? How did you kind of flip that switch and decide I'm going to try to serve the city?
Well, it's interesting. I distinctly remember it. It was morning. It was probably 7:30. I was sitting at the dining room table, kitchen table, reading the paper, and I read that the alderman, Dan McGuire, had resigned and was taking a job as the director of parks. And I had always been really active in the neighborhood and working on, community projects and that sort of thing. And I just thought, I could do that. Now, I had admittedly no idea what it meant, but still. And so I just set about saying that, I think I could make a difference here, make a bigger difference in the neighborhoods than I can just as a, citizen volunteer, which is what I'd been doing for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So I gave it a shot, went about trying to get myself elected.
And it worked.
And it worked.
So and this was a special election, right? And
then you've
been
was.
Elected, I can't do the math,
yeah.
Multiple times since
I
then,
have
right?
been.
You've been reelected and reelected
yes.
and reelected. So. So it's something I did want to touch on, and when we come back, we'll talk about the mayoral race and some of the big issues in the city. But going back to 1995, your husband was shot and killed in front of your home in the Central West End.
He was.
We were chatting about that before we started, and I thought I would run for the hills. I would move back to my small town, Indiana, and work on a farm or something. You didn't go anywhere. You stayed in your mm-hmm. condo with your two children, and then 2 years fast forward, say, not only am I staying, I'm going to work my full-time job, I'm raising a family, and I'm going to run for alderman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that...
How does that happen?
Well, this terrible incident happened. We were all coming home from Target. The kids needed river shoes, and... So we were all in the car when this, was a random act, attempted carjacking happened. So then you start thinking about, what's best for these kids. They were 2 and 5. And one of the things I said to a friend of mine at the time, I said, my kids don't need a dang crazy mother. That's the one thing they don't need. So, you just get up every day, 2-year-old still wearing diapers and everybody has to have food and, you just get up and you do what you have to do. There wasn't anything particularly noble about it. We live in a row house right there at the corner of Lake and Westminster and, we know all of our neighbors and we know them today and we knew them back then and some of them are still the same neighbors, some 21 years later. And I just determined that, my kids didn't need any more change. And so we were not going to pick up their bedrooms and move them to another house and have all kinds of strange things. We were going to be right there, and we were going to keep things as consistent as possible for them. And so that was the decision.
Yeah, you make it sound rather matter of fact, I guess. And I have an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old, and I can't.
There was nothing fathom. Matter of fact about it, but it was just, I thought about moving. I think anybody would, but. That wouldn't have solved things. In fact, I think it would have created a lot more instability in their lives. And it was really just all about, my daughter went to school across the street. What were we going to switch right. schools and switch houses? No, we weren't going to do all that. So we had a lot of great friends and a lot of good neighbors who all helped us, during that time period. So it was a tough time period for sure.
So, we covered a lot of ground, and the last couple of things I want to talk about with your work as an alder person is just what you do. And I looked up, some of the board bills you work on. You're on a number of committees. You do a lot with airport leases. Why
I do
is
now,
that? Right?
Because I'm the You're chairman of the Transportation and Commerce Committee,
right.
And so yes. So currently, I'm on the Airport Commission. Mm-hmm. So doing
so
a lot.
It just becomes your role as chair of that committee to
handle the legislation.
Yeah, the legislation
yes.
for it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a lot of these things. It's I've been in town, a dozen years, and the way our government works still doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I read and the more mm-hmm. I look at, the less sense it probably makes. And mm-hmm. so. So it's interesting to kind of dig into this and try to figure out how, you know, how these different committees work and how people get on the committees and mm-hmm. why is, you know, Lida Crewson introducing legislation for Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, it's a new airport use and lease agreement, it's called, mm-hmm. and it's pretty important for our city and our region because, as you know, Southwest Airlines is the biggest carrier out of Lambert, and we want to keep them happy. And we want to keep them, you know, with even more flights coming in and out of St. Louis.
And the airport is owned by the city, which isn't, if you look at a map, it doesn't make sense. But that's, again, another...
That's right. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Curiosity in St. Louis.
Yeah. But, you know, I think there are really three parts to being an alderman, real mm-hmm. quickly. One mm-hmm. is constituent service. Mm-hmm. And that means picking up your phone, returning your emails. If your trash doesn't get picked up, trying to help make that happen. So that's the constituent service part of it. You ought to do that if you're an alderman. If you'd like to be reelected, you definitely need to do that. It's easier and easier today with email than it was, 18 years ago, where everything almost was a phone call. But that's one part of doing the job, and you need to figure out how to do that job without having it use up all your time and all your brain cells, because you need your time and your brain cells to work on other things as well. And so the second part is to being an alderman is development, trying to facilitate development. Talk to developers about parcels that they might develop on or buildings that they might redevelop and how you might help that to happen. And then the third part of being an alderman is legislation. And so for me, that means usually citywide legislation. You probably know, and to this day, this is controversial, but I was the alderman who sponsored the no smoking ordinance in the city of St. Louis, and that's why you can't smoke in bars and restaurants today.
Thank you for that.
I like it, and I think most people do. But it was controversial. It took 6 months to pass that bill. I've done other things, I won't call it silly, but a more minor one, doggy dining. The reason that you can have your, you know, dog with you and sitting outside right. when you're at Starbucks is that we, you know, allowed doggy dining.
And this is an interesting thing too, is that we have 28 representatives across the city, but only some seem to bother themselves with citywide issues. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that
you have
true.
To choose to.
You have to choose to do that,
view, right?
Yeah, you. You know, the prescription drug monitoring bill that mm-hmm. I just introduced and was signed a few weeks ago, which is a project that we really did jointly with the county, and you know, I think that was the best way to do that. It's essentially a prescription registry program. 49 other states already have statewide right. programs, but not Missouri. So, you know, Steve Stanger, Sam Page, County Councilman Sam Page and County Executive Steve Stanger had passed this bill in the county early March. And so then when the Board of Aldermen came back into session, I introduced a very similar bill. I talked with them about it before I introduced it. And so that went very smoothly. Yeah. And we're in the process of establishing this joint registry. So.
And we'll wrap up this part with two quick things. I think I've said that four times now that we're going to do two more quick things. But two bills I think people that follow my website and follow Next STL kind of are interested in are one, the NFL stadium. And I know mm-hmm. it's old news. They're gone. We've seemingly gotten over that pretty quick. But that was something that I don't know how to characterize. You were supportive of or you voted in favor mm-hmm. of that. What was your thinking and why were you a supporter of trying to keep the Rams in St. Louis?
Well, I think ask yourself what would we have all the whole community been saying if the Rams said, hey, we think we want to move, and we would have said, okay, great, go ahead, guys, see you later. What kind of conversation would we have been having then? I mean, I think that being an NFL city is better than not being an NFL city in some ways, but the fact that they made that choice and they're now in LA and you know, we're moving on. So it was really a matter of trying to make a good faith effort to keep a business here, an entertainment venue here, and probably not totally realizing how much they really wanted to move.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that caught people by surprise in the end. But I, you know, in our conversations about the project was generally, I think people took it as being kind of anti-pro sports, but it was really trying to have a conversation of what is it worth and how much should we be willing to give? And
right.
And I don't know what the number was. It wasn't my responsibility to vote, lucky me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe $100 million made sense, but it seemed like what they were asking for was so big. Mm-hmm. And the process where, you know, the county wasn't going to chip in and the state was doing a little bit just really seemed to put a heavy, heavy burden on the city of St. Louis, which is already... supposed to host every parade and host every festival and host every sports right. team without a lot of support regionally. So how did you make that decision of whatever the number is, 200 right. million is okay, 300 million is okay. And it doesn't seem, again, like the Board of Aldermen was armed with a lot of good information about what this real, what the real impact would be and exactly where the money would come from.
You know, it was tough to get the information and it was slow coming out and all those kinds of things, which was annoying at the time, but we don't really have the luxury of, at least I don't think we should take the luxury of saying I didn't have the information soon enough. I didn't, you know, they didn't consult me and therefore I'm not going to consider the information. I think we have to do the best we can with the information we have and ask for more. It actually was a very heavy lift on the part of the state, and it would have been a heavy lift on the part of the NFL and not a, much of a lift for the city of St. Louis in order to keep the team here. But since they're gone, they're gone. I hope we have a lot more conventions at the convention center. I know that the convention center needs some work in order to make it competitive with surrounding cities, whether that's Nashville or Indianapolis or Louisville, and so that we've got to set about doing those things. One of the things I will say is that while we do have to think about big projects when they come our way, big projects are not going to save our city. Big projects are not going to make our city. I mean, we really do have to focus on smaller projects and sort of weaving together the fabric of our community. And those, you know, we all know, or we read in the business magazines, if you look at them, it's the small businesses where the job growth is. And that's what we're looking for here in St. Louis. So that said, we're all very happy that we were able to retain the 3,100 NGA jobs.
Right, right. That's another big issue.
Big project. But again, what would you have said if NGA said, oh, we think we want to move, and we just said, oh, okay, well, great, you
right.
know,
it's
go
hard
on.
To, it's hard to blame the effort, but it seems like there's a lack of conversation of again, what's that number? You know,
right.
And it seems
yeah.
like the number just kept moving and moving and moving, and along the way it's like, well, we're kind of forced to vote for this, you know. It's kind of yeah. it felt very
well, actually, pushed. I was proud to vote for NGA.
Right. That's another.
And it did save 3,100 jobs, and yes, they do have some subsidy, but I think long term for our community, the connection between Cortex mm-hmm. and NGA is going to be a very good connection. I said at a ward meeting, I think I said, well, you know, NGA, it's our country's biggest spy agency. Everybody's kind of looking at me, and I said, yeah, and where do you think those young spies want to live? I mean, they want to live in an urban environment.
They want to live in the Opus development.
Yeah, there you go. They want right. to live where it's all happening. And so I think that's, right. You know, every company, every industry is trying to attract and retain talent. And I yeah. think that with NGA, we also have the opportunity through the construction of the project, 38% minority workforce participation promised by the unions. We have the opportunity there to train a whole generation of folks and help them to establish careers, not right. just jobs, careers.
And let's,
so
I'm hopeful. I want to talk more about NGA. The last piece of legislation was the change from 28 wards to 14.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of old news now, and people mm-hmm. who are new to St. Louis don't know anything about it. We've had 28 wards for a century, I don't know, a long time.
Long time.
So an older person used to represent 30,000 people, and now it's down to about 10,000, you know, 10,500
mm-hmm.
people or so. So we're changing after the 2020 census, which will come out in 2021, with the 2023 election to go down to 14
right.
Wards, and so 14 aldermen and a president of the board. Why were you supportive of that, and what does that do to the job of the alderman? How does that change the city?
Well, I think to the job of the alderman, it broadens the position, and I think ultimately will be good. It'll possibly help us think less parochially and more big picture, more citywide. I was in favor of that. You probably know I was one of the main sponsors on that bill and in charge of trying to get that passed. And so I'm very in favor of that. I think, frankly, it'll make the Board of Aldermen a stronger entity. This form of government that we have here desperately needs modernized. Mm-hmm. And this is one small step, and hopefully there'll be many more. Yes.
All right. Well, we'll pause that conversation there, but we'll be back to talk about the upcoming mayoral race. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Future Great City podcast is sponsored by Creatives on Call. Playing matchmaker in your work life for over 20 years, Creatives on Call is dedicated to matching creatives with freelance, temporary, and permanent positions. This women-owned and run business was the first creative staffing agency in St. Louis and prides itself on working with both entry-level and seasoned senior-level candidates looking for positions with a primary focus on design and marketing. To see the latest openings for creatives, or if you're looking to hire inspired talent, visit creativesoncall.com. Okay, we're back with Alderwoman Lyda Crewson. And Lyda, you just announced you're running for mayor of the city of St. Louis. And I don't know if it was a big surprise, but I think you're the first one to jump in and make it official. What was your decision process, and how did you come to the point where you thought this was the next step you wanted to take?
Well, last Tuesday, so about 8 or 9 days ago, I guess it was, yes, I announced officially that I am a candidate for mayor of the city of St. Louis. I think who the mayor is matters. And frankly, I had been thinking about it since the day Francis Slay announced that he wasn't running again.
Not before? He didn't?
You know, I thought about it in a very peripheral way before.
Sure.
But
well, and I know you have people who this isn't, I'm sure people have told you would be a good mayor at some point. I mean, this isn't out of left field. You're not an underdog. Is that the right way to say it? I mean, you're known for, you know, your service in the 20th Ward. So I think it wasn't, maybe that was the part that wasn't a surprise,
right.
But it's still,
yeah.
it was still a big announcement.
Yeah.
So off you go.
Well, it was. And I finally just decided, you know, I'd been thinking about this, for the last 6 weeks or so, and it was time to start doing it. There was not going to be any more information available, you know, in 30 days than there was last week. And so if I was going to really run, I thought I should get out there, announce that I'm running, and start down that road. And, you know, I think that is, you know, it's part of hopefully being able to really put together a winning coalition and, you know, making it to room 200.
So what's the checklist look like for the next 30 days? I mean, what do you do when you say, okay, you say, I'm going to announce, and a lot of these things were probably done before you make it official, right? So I'm sure you have to talk to people about fundraising. You have to talk to people about strategy. You have to kind of go down that road before you make it official. But what do you do from here on out? What's the early stage of a mayoral campaign look like?
Well, let me tell you, the checklist is long. you know, as a for example, I mean, tomorrow I'm going to be going door to door in the 26th Ward. Last Saturday I was going door to door in Tower Grove South. Sunday I'll be in the Pride Parade with a team of people that are supporting me. And so there's all that outside time that you spend with people trying to get to know folks. But then there's also fundraising, trying to raise funds. You know, unfortunately, these elections are pretty expensive. And they've gotten more and more expensive over, you know, the last decade or so. But that's the world we're in. So, you know, I think, you know, there's two parts of the campaign. You got to raise the money to get your message out in order to get the voters to the polls to support you on March 7th, 2017.
So no one really expected the mayor to not run again, I think. I mean, this was really, and everyone I know who is you know, talks to him much more frequently than I do also didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a big surprise, and it seems to have led to what many expect to just be a wide open race. So there doesn't seem to be kind of an anointed next mayor or
mm-hmm.
someone who naturally fills that position. How do you see the race? Well, in the city we're all Democrats basically, more or less, you know, it's kind of like we'll leave it there, but it's not it's a one party town. How do you see the race kind of coming about, and how do you find a constituency coming out of the 28th Ward where you don't have a citywide office, but no one has a citywide office virtually. We'll see who else runs, but, how do you start tackling that issue? How do you create a bigger footprint?
I think you do it through friends that you have who live in other areas, and through contacts, and through getting out there and speaking to people and shaking their hand and, you know, letting them get to know you. And, you know, it's a citywide campaign. And one of the things that we said that we would do, which we absolutely are doing, is we're going to, you know, walk every neighborhood of the city, north to south, east to west. We announced on Tuesday, and on Saturday we were in the field going door to door. And we'll go to door to door again tomorrow, and, you know, plan to do that every Saturday from now till, you know, March 7th. I don't know, maybe we'll take a day or two off. Right. But, you know, the point really here is that, you know, we plan to implement that plan. And there'll be many other parts to the campaign. But, you know, I think, I hope to tell voters to look, try to evaluate people on who do you think can do the best job being the mayor. You know, I come from a business background. You know that I'm a CPA. I'm the CFO of a major architectural and planning firm. So I've done that for many, many years, and I think that gives me some skills that some other folks may not have. But that, in addition to having legislative experience, I think is a really good combination for going into the mayor's office. We've got a lot of issues facing our city, and on the other hand, most of us really love St. Louis. We've got a lot of good things going on here. It's so easy to focus on the stuff that's wrong. But most St. Louisans, I think, do love St. Louis. We will focus on crime. We'll focus on having safer neighborhoods, trying to give the police the tools that they need, which would start with filling the open positions in the police department, try to do some innovative things there. So safer neighborhoods is one focus. Modernizing government is another focus, and that's a really broad term, but, you know, just I use as an example. I don't know, I guess you've been on the city's website. It's better than it's better than it used to be. It could be a lot better.
Right. So what's interesting to me, though, is that you kind of run through this list of things that I think we're all going to agree on some of the big issues that are challenging the city. I think the question a lot of people have had, and a lot of us here have frankly known one mayor. I mean, he's been mayor since I've been here and well before that. What power does the mayor have to do these things? Because as I've, you know, personally pushed for some different things, you know, I've gotten the feedback sometimes like, well, you know, we have a weak mayor system. The mayor can't do that. The mayor can't force the alderman to do that. The mayor, until we had local control of the police department, the mayor couldn't do anything with the police. So how does a mayor address, you know, crime? How does the mayor address vacancy in the city? How does a mayor address these things in a productive way?
Well, those are a couple of good subjects here. Crime, of course, we talked about that, and that is partly, I think, having a collaborative approach with judges, with prosecutors, with social service agencies, and with the police department, of course. I don't think we're going to arrest our way out of this problem. I think it's a lot broader than that, a lot bigger than that. But the collaboration and the tone that's set at the top, I think, is helpful in solving some of those issues. I admit to some of the limitations of the office, but, you know, you can't get the perfect office, so you have to go into the job and try to, you know, work within that system until you can get that system to change.
And I've spent some time looking at crime in St. Louis and looking at similar cities, and I categorize those as Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Cincinnati primarily. And if you look at those four cities, you know, including St. Louis, population's about the same, minority population's about the same, education levels are about the same, income levels are about the same. And yet St. Louis, to single out just one statistic, which I know is picking the easy one, has probably twice as many homicides in a year as those cities. With not, you know, it's one thing to say we're not Denver or San Francisco or Seattle, but we seem to be failing pretty drastically compared to cities that we have everything in common with. I guess I don't expect you to have an answer. I'm going to ask anyway, what is happening in St. Louis? Why do we have this problem here? And, I mean, how do you look at that? And how do you say, like, what in the heck is going on here? How do you view the issue?
Well, I think you do have to really dig into it a little bit deeper. I can't tell you that I have the exact answer to that, but, you know, part of the issue that we have here in Missouri is this easy access to guns.
You keep saying Missouri. Is that?
You know, I do. You know, I was.
On purpose. It's. I mean, there's a divide here.
No, it's kind of on purpose, and it kind of isn't. I was born in Iowa. I lived in St. Joe, Missouri, then Fairfield, Illinois. Then I graduated from high school in Moberly, Missouri. Went to college in Kirksville.
So I come by it naturally.
Okay. I come by it naturally.
I always say it ironically as I'm being kind of snippy about something.
Yeah,
that's
right. So here in Missouri, as I will say, we have incredibly loose, lax, unaccountable gun laws. And, you know, that's part of our issue. I don't know that we're going to change that. I mean, we just witnessed yesterday a big sit-in in Congress. So, you know, will we as a country decide to do something about that or not? It's been pretty discouraging up to this point, but perhaps we are at a turning point. I certainly hope that we are. But in terms of being different than those other cities, more support for our police, but also a much more collaborative approach is, I think, the way I look at that. And I'm sure I don't know everything about it at this point in time.
But I think what a lot of people would look at is you know, let's, as a community, it feels like we need, and starting with the mayor, you set the tone at the top, whether you have the ability to change this or change that, is to put a stake in the ground and say, here's our goal, you know? And so I don't know what that, you know, what I think I see is that every time homicides go up and major crime goes up, people say, oh, the economy's down or unemployment's up or, you know, it's beyond our control. And every time crime goes down, it's like really smart police work, of course. And it's just kind of, at some point, that's obviously not working. And you know, again, Mayor Slay has been mayor so long that he's been through multiple ups and downs of crime waves and not crime waves.
Right.
And so, you know, I think the mayor gets too much credit and too much blame all at the same time. But, you know, all that said, you know, there are people who are apologists for the crime rate in St. Louis and just always say like, well, it's just because of this. We're at the intersection of major interstates and there's, you know, drug trade here and all this kind of stuff. But at some point we just have to say, we're going to cut this number in half. And I don't know how the hell we're going to do it, but here we go. You know?
Well, one of the things that I do agree with Gabe Lozano about, who's been very vocal in recent days, weeks, is that you do have to measure things that you care about, and you do have to have goals to reduce them. And whether it's drugs, drug culture, a gang culture, I mean, there's been a lot of written recently about that in St. Louis. You know, so you have to try to tackle those underlying issues. You know, predictability for who commits crimes and those sorts of things are all tools, you know, that we have to employ. I mean, in the 90s, you know, certainly we had a lot higher murders but than we do now. But frankly, the statistics don't matter much on this. They matter. We should have a goal to have the statistic go down. But if you are one of the 188 families that was had someone killed last year, you know, you're not really sitting around thinking about statistics. You're thinking about how your life has been forever changed. And so.
But, you know, I'll tell you one thing. I live in University City now, and I lived in, and people know the ward. I'm not trying to call somebody out, but I lived in Forest Park Southeast, and people were getting shot in my neighborhood. We lived there for 5 years, and we had two little kids. And the response I got, basically the response I didn't get from those in power in the region, in that neighborhood, that part of the city, is a large component of what drove me out of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had the experience of multiple shootings within a month, within two blocks of my home, and me calling anyone I could think of to call and say, hey, like, I want to know what the hell is going on. And people were just saying, well, there's a safety meeting in 7 weeks, or we already talked to the people who were affected. And I'm like, this is crazy, you know? And some of that was neighbors too. I mean, neighbors had gone through that neighborhood and said, well, it used to be much worse. And I'm like, holy crap, you know?
Right.
And it got to a point where you felt, and there were very basic issues too. I needed a fourth bedroom and I couldn't find a house, right?
Of course.
So there's a lot of things that went on, but I know that, you know, changing the tone can be so effective and, you know, a mayor can't control the number, that you arrive at, but yeah, changing that tone seems to be very important. But let me use that as a jumping off point to a more regional look, because I think a lot of what, one problem with the crime rates in the city and what's happening is that, you know, if you live in Webster Groves or Kirkwood or University City, it's really hard to care about crime in the city. It just is. Even if you go to Cardinals games and things, I mean, I have the experience of neighbors saying, yes, crime's a problem, but are they actually going to do anything about it? Is there going to be any collaboration? And I've had the experience in the suburban communities of asking a mayor about the next town over and saying, well, what do you think about Wellston? And they say, well, it's not my town. I'm like, oh crap, you know, we're in trouble. So as a mayor of St. Louis, and there's another point of this, is like the role of the mayor of St. Louis is outsized, right? You represent 11% of the metro population. That's pretty tiny. You kind of, again, it's a weak position in a way, but you're still, you know, when St. Louis is on the news, the mayor of St. Louis is the one on the news. So what do you do? How do you work regionally to address crime? How do you become friends with the county executive? How do how can you get on good terms? So you're texting Mark Kern and Steve Ellman and you're talking about crime. Like, how do you get to that point?
I think you just do it. I mean, you know, to this point anyway, I would consider that I have a good relationship with all those folks. Now, admittedly, it's not a deep relationship. It's more superficial, but I intend to continue to have that relationship. It's really important that we work together on a lot of regional issues and ultimately important, perhaps, that we don't have as much fragmentation as we have today. You probably saw the Better Together report that came out last week, I think it was, and talked about, you know, 90-some municipalities and many fire departments and police departments. And so we have to figure out ways of modernizing government, streamlining some of those processes, and hopefully saving some money in the process of doing that, that we can spend on other things. For example, infrastructure. I mean, you know, the city of St. Louis, we have a number of bridges that need to be replaced, but frankly, we're not applying for the federal funds on those bridges because we don't really have the local match that it takes to get it, replaced. Mm-hmm. And so a much more regional approach to all of our issues. And if we can save money on operating our government, perhaps we'll have money to do some of those other things that would make our lives richer and our communities better.
Well, and beyond just having good, solid relationships and communication, which obviously is not taken for granted. That doesn't exist in our region in a lot of ways. Or would you be in favor of consolidating municipalities in the county, of the city of St. Louis reentering the county, and or maybe I'll let you frame that how you want, mm-hmm. because there's, people say the word merger or something like that, but there's really 40 different ways this could be tackled.
There are 40 different ways it could be tackled. And I think that whether St. Louis reenters the county as a municipality, which I would be in favor of that, or whether we actually do some kind of a merger, Unigov, I would also be in favor of that. I think it is a disadvantage to all of us that we are fussing over where the next shopping, store goes, and we don't have a very unified position at all on TIFs and incentives and that kind of thing. And so the point here is to think more regionally and act more regionally. We do have a start on this. We have the St. Louis Economic Development Partnership. I intend to be a lot more involved with them when I'm in room 200, and that would be to know what they're working on, to figure out ways that I might be able to help with what they're working on. Is there something that I can do? Because developing jobs, companies that provide opportunity for all of our residents is really what is going to make the world go round.
And the stories of St. Louis, of companies coming to St. Louis to, be sold on downtown and not being shown Clayton, or being, the county brings them in and shows them Maryland Heights, but doesn't even tell them what downtown is. These stories are just, you hear them, you start getting engaged in these issues, and you hear them over and over, and you just shake your head and think, no one picked up the phone. Mm-hmm. There wasn't one place for someone to call. If someone wanted to move their business to St. Louis, do you call the city manager of Richmond Heights? Like, probably not. You don't know enough to even get started. So, let's talk about regional collaboration. So NGA was a big win. Mm-hmm. I guess I was going to say regionally on this side of the river. I mean, that was a case where Steve Stanger, the county, St. Louis County executive, and the city quickly got on the same page, endorsed the North City site, and ended up getting that project. And it's $1.7 billion. We talked about it a little bit. It's 3,000 jobs. And what I always point out is it's a 100-year investment, if not more. It's not a business that might be acquired and moved to Ireland or something. This is something that the city is going to be home to for a very long time. How did that come about? How did that collaboration work? And I know you weren't the mayor at the time, but you were involved in the process and supportive.
Right. Yeah, I don't know all of it, but I will give a large amount of the credit for that to Otis Williams, who represented the city in that effort, and also to Steve Stanger, of course, the mayor. Otis works for the mayor. But I think the fact that County Executive Stanger supported the city's effort on that is a very big plus for him, and we shouldn't forget about that too quickly, because that was very important to the region, not just the city of St. Louis, but to the region, and we collaborated on that. So we should build off that success.
Yeah, and so building off that success, the mayor started mentioning almost immediately that they were going to his rhetoric re-energized the North-South Metrolink. Mm-hmm. And this has been something that's been talked about for a decade, but really wasn't getting any vocal support. So you land NGA, and then almost immediately the mayor comes out and through Twitter and on his blog and stuff says, here we go, we're doing North-South Metrolink, and we're applying for a grant. And then just in the last week, and it was just bizarre, people can read about it on the website, but the city basically lined up supporters for the grant, and it's just a grant application. It's not, they're not,
I think it's 500,000 or something. Yes.
Right. So to kind of the next step that's needed to do the study, asked for Stanger's support. And not only did he not support it, he wrote a letter opposing the grant application, and then came out just today as we speak, so several days ago now, probably as you're listening to this, to say we're studying our own lines, and in the end, we're going to do our thing. You guys do your thing, and then we can fight about it eventually. What happened there? How do we?
You know,
do
I don't know, because I wasn't inside of either one of those offices at the time, but I would say this: you know, the better relationship that the county can have with the city, and the city can have with the county, the better it is for all of us. I mean, I'd like on there's no doubt that I'm a supporter of Metrolink expansion. You know, can't we really think big here and get an expansion that serves both the city and county? I would hope that we could do that. Very expensive project, so we're going to have to figure out how we can pay for that. But if we really are interested in having a vision for St. Louis and what St. Louis is going to look like 50 years from now, we don't really have the luxury of not working together. And so we're
Well, and it just seems like the issue is so transparently political, and that, you know, it's our tax money. We're going to keep it on this side of Skinker. You know, it's just like, really? Like, and I mean, I'm, you know, we're in the middle of discussing the issue on the website and talking about how I actually think the city line is best for the county. I mean, the county, that, you know, North County is not economically growing. It's not healthy in a lot of ways. So connecting North County to any opportunity is probably the best thing the county can possibly do. And yet they're looking at other lines. So, so we'll keep following that. But, to kind of wrap up our discussion, you know, I'm a 39-year-old white male. You're a white woman, if people don't know. How do you address a city that has, you know, a lot of the events of the last couple of years aren't in St. Louis City. Michael Brown was shot and killed in Ferguson, but we had protests in the Central West End. You had protests in Shaw. You had two more, at least, if I'm, you know, it's amazing you can lose count. Two more police shootings in the city of St. Louis of young black men. How do you represent what's in some ways a divided city? And I don't want to overemphasize that we're divided, because I don't know, there's no reason to dwell on it. And I actually think we're less segregated than people talk about. And there's, we can talk about that maybe, but how do you represent a city, and how do you get into a community and say, I can represent you and I understand what your challenges are?
Listen a lot to other folks. I think that, you know, the situation that you just described just proves that all of us don't think, the residents don't think, oh, that was in the city, I think I'll keep this objection to the city, or that happened in the county, I think I'll keep the objection in the county. I mean, we are one community, even though we are separated by municipal lines in many, many ways and sliced and diced, but we will, you know, I don't know, when I drive from Richmond Heights maybe to Clayton or to Maplewood, I know kind of where the line is, but
I know
that's not the way.
I know who pulled me over. That's how I know.
Yeah, you know who pulled you over. Yes. Slow down.
I read the car, and I'm like, oh, that's where I am.
Exactly.
I'm in Ladue.
So, you know, I think, you know, we have to have inclusion for all of our residents. I mean, the better inclusion that we have, the better jobs that we have, the more opportunities that we have for all of our residents, no matter whether they live in North County or North City or South County or South City or West County, the better off our community is.
So we'll wrap it up with what is a pretty cheesy question we asked. This is called the Future Great City Podcast. And this was and we like to think about, what does it mean for St. Louis to be a future great city? And I always say that, you know, it used to be population growth, and we were so focused on, we're still losing people, we're horrible, and Atlanta is gaining people, they must be fantastic, you know? And I think we're slowly changing that mindset maybe, but in your mind, what does it take if you're, you know, if you're mayor 4 years, 8 years, 10 years from now, what does a future great St. Louis look like?
Very good question. Well, I think it has safe neighborhoods for folks, has opportunities for people to have good jobs, to go to work every day, to raise their families in a safe neighborhood, to attend a good school. That's what a great city, I think, looks like for the people who live there. And I hope that that also means there'll be more people who want to live there, more companies who want to locate here and provide those kinds of opportunities.
That's great. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. And thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And good luck.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Alex.
Thank you to Creatives on Call for sponsoring the Future Great City Podcast. Creatives on Call is a staffing agency dedicated to matching creatives with temporary, freelance, and permanent positions in the design and marketing industries. Visit creativesoncall.com. And thank you again to Red Brick Realty, the new full-service boutique St. Louis brokerage firm. Give Scott a call at 314-420-9491 and get $500 off by mentioning the Future Great City podcast when you close a deal with Red Brick. You can subscribe to this podcast via RSS feed or on iTunes, and can follow the site on Twitter at NextSTL. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. NextSTL.com.